Hollande was considered the winner of the only presidential debate Tuesday. The French say they found him more dignified and convincing than Sarkozy. In another blow to Sarkozy, the head of the centrist party, which got nearly 10% of the vote in the first round, endorsed Hollande. Sarkozy has warned that Hollande's programs to fix the economy amount to old-style socialist spending that will make France more like Spain or Greece. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
The Egyptian military is again confronting angry crowds who want a civilian government in power. Today, troops try to beat back thousands of demonstrators in downtown Cairo with metal sticks and water cannon as protesters hurled rocks at security forces. Clashes capped a violent week during which 9 people have died ahead of this month's presidential elections. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Charles Schwab, offering market commentary and perspective on changing markets online, by phone, or in a local branch. Learn more at schwab.com.
This fall, visit England and Wales, locations made famous in Last of the Summer Wine, Downton Abbey, and more, including Agatha Christie's home on the coast of South Devon. Does American history suit you? Well, travel in private vintage train cars on our Civil War train. This September's itinerary includes important southern battlefields and discussions with historian Anthony Pitch. Information is at will.illinois.edu/willtravel or call 217-333-7300.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, offering more than 3,000 certified organic products, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar and bulk foods department, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is hour two of the program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the show. Jason Croft is at the controls. We're very pleased to have you in the studio once again for our regular show on dog care and behavior. Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm. They're both with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Jim raises Malamutes, and Carol has a golden and a doodle living at her house. And they have been a regular feature here for quite a while, giving some advice on how we can live better with our doggy animal companions. And if you have questions, maybe you have some sort of issue that you want to talk about, or you just want to say hi, you can call and you can do that. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Also, email is possible if you'd like to send your questions that way. It is will-talk@illinois.edu. That is the email. Thanks very much for being here.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Maybe one other time I did the show with you. Otherwise, this is a completely new experience for me.
It's the lusty month of May.
And is there lustfulness lusty going on? I mean, is this you're talking about personal lust or
referencing what was the musical, Don Quixote?
Actually, I think you're thinking of Camelot, but that's okay. Yeah.
Yes. It might be.
Yes.
I was thinking of Don Quixote.
You're thinking of tilting at windmills?
I do that every day.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm pretty bad at it. So.
Anything going on?
See, that's what's so entertaining with him, isn't it?
You just never know what this man is going to say. Don Quixote. Anything going on?
That was Camelot.
I know it was Camelot. Anything going on with the club that you might want to talk about?
We just last weekend had our spring agility trial. And I guess trial is probably an apt term because we had adverse weather conditions, the rain and the cold and the wind and... But they had a great time. Everybody has a great time when they come, so it was very successful.
And was this something that you do? You hold them outside?
Or yes.
Okay.
We have the option of moving them indoors, but this one was held outdoors.
Okay.
As will the one in July will be indoors.
Okay. I think I'm sure that I have seen this. Maybe people have seen this exercise on television, where this is the thing where the dogs, they run through little tunnels and they go up a tilt board, and they have a thing where they have to weave in and out among
some little sticks.
And the thing that always strikes me when I see this, that always amazes me, it seems like the dogs are having such a great time.
They are.
And I don't know if that's just, I'm anthropomorphizing that, but if you look at them, and you look at them and how they're looking back and forth between them and their person, they just seem to be having so much fun. I don't think you can look at them and not think that that's what was going on.
It's a true definition of teamwork. Yeah. The dog and the handler, they have to work together.
So the dog, Also, I kind of wonder whether the dog just couldn't go. It just couldn't do that. I mean, how dependent are they on getting direction from the handler?
Oh, I would imagine
it's somewhere. More. It's more for the next obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
So, they have numbers cones with number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for each station, and the very few dogs can read numbers past 3 or 4. So we have to have the human there to say, go to there, go to there, go to there. But that's all. That's all the human is doing at that particular moment. Of course, if it was that easy, everyone would do it.
That's right.
It's training it is a challenge, but also training it is a lot of fun for both human and dog.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine the humans are a lot more nervous at the trial than the dogs are.
No, the dogs just want to run. It's a joyful sound in our buildings when agility classes are being held. The dogs are happy. The owners are thrilled with every little accomplishment they achieve. And, it's pretty exciting.
Do they find that some animals take to it, and it's almost as if they know what you want to do, and others would sit there and look at you like, well, okay, what is it you're expecting me to do here?
I've seen most breeds trained. I even saw a Great Dane once.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller dogs, and I'm speaking as a owner of Malamutes, in the agility world, Border Collies are large dogs. And in our world, of course, they're lunch. But they're the right size for a lot of these exercises. There's a tunnel, for example, and I saw a Great Dane in agility once, and he had to virtually get down on his knees
and crawl through.
Not quite.
Tunnels aren't made larger or smaller for the breed. The only thing that varies would be the height of the jumps. And
I don't know. With the teacup.
That may be the case. I overlooked teacup.
There are people
teacup
with
agility.
The really for the really mm-hmm. tiny dogs.
Well, I forgot what the limit is.
I don't remember.
But
either.
it's under 20 inches. It might even be lower than that. Obviously, the very small dogs would go in that too. But some kind of taller dogs, mm-hmm. but none of them very big. And I don't know if the tunnels are smaller. There are other obstacles that are smaller.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You see German Shepherds and Golden Retrievers in there as well as for your larger end of the spectrum. But
a bulldog, I remember. We had someone in the club had a bulldog doing agility.
Yeah, Frenchie, right?
And there are Frenchies in the club that do agility. Yeah.
So, and if somebody wanted to learn how to do this, you have classes
mm-hmm.
so to help teach the people and their friends what they need to do?
Yes, we do.
There are prerequisites for the class.
There are prerequisites. And, they're not onerous. I mean, it's something that you would, if you just have a logical mind, this is the way it would work. You get your canine good citizenship test through our home companion class and then go through what we call sub-novice because, you remember, agility is all off-lead.
Oh, right.
There's no leashes used.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's to help the dog learn some off-lead work, but also to enhance what they've learned in the earlier classes. Then you can, if you wish, go on to agility. So not all that easy. It depends on, I, for one, now wouldn't find much pleasure racing around the ring. But that doesn't mean I couldn't try it. I mean, just because if you learn agility, you don't necessarily, you can do it for fun. Just for another, increasing the bond between you and your canine companion. You don't have to compete, but that's the ultimate goal for most.
How about how long does it take to do the training so you can get to the point where they can they can at least do, you might not have a champion, but they could at least
do all
the tasks.
I trained a dog, and I actually got a ribbon. He only got one leg. Unfortunately, you need 3 legs to get a title, and he only got one. But he had other physical problems. It was difficult for him to jump, and it also with Malamutes, it takes a long time to teach stuff, and he was just getting older and older. But it took me about a year and a half before I could reliably go in the ring with him.
That would be about right.
And now this is after he was already trained and already got titles in obedience. One of the reasons we have prerequisites for agility is we have limited space for it, and the dog at least has to be under control, understand some basic behaviors and commands, so that the dog doesn't, as soon as you take him off lead, just start running around, which a lot of dogs do even after they're trained. They go, I'm free.
But it's so exciting for them. The whole venue's exciting. It's just another venue for your, you know, yeah. for dog sports. We have our obedience trial coming up June
9th and 10th.
Thank you. I was going to say 10th and 11th, but I knew that wasn't correct. June 9th and 10th, and that'll be an indoor event at our dog training club, and that's where you see all your obedience enthusiasts there for competition. And
it's
the
open
weekend,
to the public, but you cannot bring your own
dog. Yeah, it's
dog.
Open to the public.
Only dogs that are actually entered in the
And Jim
show.
And I will be volunteering.
I think I'm head of the grounds committee.
You're always head of the grounds
yeah.
committee.
Oops.
And then the week before that, we have what we call a match. So people can come and enter their dog. It's, you know, it's not an official event, but it is for our club. And you can enter your dog and kind of fine-tune some things you want to work on for the following weekend or just see how far you've progressed in your classes and compete. And it's, you know, it's low-key and stress-free. And
when we say compete,
I say low-key and stress-free, but it's not for the exhibitor.
Well, it is stressful, but so is life. And I wanted to emphasize, when we say compete, you can compete against others, like for high-end trial and things like that, or for high in your own class. But for the most part, you're competing kind of against yourself. You are trying to get a score, a minimal score, to get you a leg, which means if you get three legs, you have a three-legged dog and you have a title under the AKC.
He's kidding about three-legged dog
I
people.
Am kidding, but that's what we humorously say when we get our third leg. I have a three-legged dog.
Yeah. I have seen them. They seem to do okay.
Yeah. But in other words...
you're competing against the score.
It's like what we always say, what do you call the medical student who graduates bottom in his class?
The doctor.
You call him doctor. And
I caught you there.
I figured that was what where we were headed on that one. But
what do you call a dog that gets a 170 three times? You call him a companion dog, a CD title. So you don't have to get the 200 perfect score every time.
You have to – a minimum score is 170. Maximum score, anyone can achieve this 200. So they take off points.
So when you're competing, you're at least I'm not trying to get anything fancy. I'm trying to get a title on the dog. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Malamutes aren't dumb, but they don't work with the precision that Border Collies work with, for example.
They're not so enthusiastic about the
around
thing.
Gee, didn't we do this yesterday? Do we have to do it again today?
That's pretty apt.
Well, and teaching them to retrieve, for example, is tough because you throw it and they bring it back and then you do it again and they look at you.
It's like, we just
brought it back. Can't you hang on to it? So it's, in fact, Neelix, I got an advanced title on Neelix. He would jump, the broad jump, exactly twice a day.
That was it.
So if I warmed him up and jumped him three times before going to a trial, he would not take the third jump. Hmm. That's what I mean. He could count up to three.
So depending on the dog and the personality of the dog, you might either know that they would do this or they would not. They would say, you know, maybe they would have a great time or maybe they would think, what are we doing this for?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they seem to be saying that.
They could
be thinking of quadratic equations for all I know. But
it's possible. And if we only gave them a way to write it down.
In the next few months, May and June... We have a confirmation show in Bloomington, and I believe that's...
We don't, but the Bloomington people do.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was talking as a dog person. Okay, so there are confirmation shows in Bloomington at their Civic Center. And
is it the Civic Center? I thought it was at the...
It was the Civic Center, but they let them use it.
Yeah, it's at that exposition center.
Exposition center.
Just
I
off,
guess that's what I want to call it. I don't know. I get lost every time I go.
It's the interstate
always
exposition hall.
Always turn the wrong direction. Two choices, I'm always wrong. But that's
Well worth
going
weekend. To. It's a fairly big show.
It's a good size show, and I think it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday of Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, it might, yeah.
And
they
so
have agility there. They have obedience as well as confirmation.
Yeah, so it's, you know,
rally.
Take one of the days of the four-day Well, see, I'm saying 4-day holiday because I'm taking Friday off of that weekend. But Does take a day and drive over to Bloomington.
Or?
No, as a matter of fact.
I'll be
take
glad
one
to
of
tell.
Those days and travel to Bloomington, and you see a variety of dogs that you probably will never see other than in a show.
And so I'm assuming that when you talk about confirmation, it's the idea is that here's an individual breed and someone has set some set of ideal standards, and then each individual dog, you look at how close they come to meeting whatever is supposed to be the ideal.
You nailed it,
size,
David.
Shape,
That's
size,
how it works.
Ears, tail.
It's
and
very
all that
platonic.
Kind of stuff. Very platonic.
Yeah, the ideal the, floating oh, around yeah, somewhere.
But anyway, I could spend an entire day and not even have a dog entered because it's just something that I truly enjoy.
And they have some great ice cream. There's vendors there, and they have
great
gifts
ice cream.
Oh, you can buy dog
buy.
Stuff too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good fun for the whole family.
Fun for the whole family. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was at a show the Champagne Kennel Club was one of a 4-day cluster at Decatur last weekend. At the Farm Progress
Center.
Progress City, I think they
Progress
call it.
Progress City, yeah.
And
they have new buildings there.
Yeah, it was really pretty nice. I spent the whole day there. But I saw a family, and it was the mom and husband and three kids, and they were there all day. And I don't think they were showing. They just went from ring to ring and stayed, and then I saw them at groups. And so it's just if you're a dog person, it's heaven on earth. If you're not, it's probably like watching paint dry.
Okay. Our guests in this part of Focus, Jim Keel, Carol Lindholm from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They're on the show once a month, so always on Friday, to talk about dog care and behavior. And I'm sure that if people are interested in things that will be going on, at least that your club is sponsoring, you guys have a website they can go to and check it out.
We do indeed, dtccu.net, or Google Dog Training Club, and it pops up
Dog Training
first.
Club of Champaign-Urbana.
Right. Well, even if I do dog training club,
there's
probably like a lot of dog training clubs.
Because I Google it all the time. That's why it comes up.
It knows what you're looking for.
Yes.
But if you go to our website, we have a calendar of events there, and you can pop that up and take a look.
Oh, and for folks who are listening here, you have questions about dog behavior and training, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email if you'd like to do that too, will-talk@illinois.edu. I was thinking about looking for things that we could talk about and looking for websites that had to do with dog behavior. And I came across one article that was something like, top 10 problem dog behaviors or top 5 or whatever. And obviously that we're talking about stuff that's problems for us, not problems for them. And what struck me is these things, and I know it's the things that you all have talked about on the show, they're things that are natural dog behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, how many times have people called in and said, how can I stop my dog from barking? Think well.
Oh,
that's
gosh,
what dogs
that
do,
question.
Or jumping up.
Yeah.
It's like that. It seems the problem is that in a way, in our wanting to live with them, we're working against stuff that are natural behaviors for them. So it's trying to get it so that they will not do something, or maybe only do it when we say, okay, now is the time to do this thing. That's really tough.
Yeah, the one of the paradoxes is people. And somebody actually asked me this once, and they were not it was a lawyer, so presumably had some savvy, and said,
I want
to teach my dog not to bark, but I do want him to bark,
I'm
paraphrasing.
What I want them to.
I want him to bark at bad people, but not at good people. And I'm going, well, if only I could recognize good from bad people, then I'd bark too, but... I said, I'm not sure that's possible to train that. And if it is, I certainly don't know how. I can train them to reduce the amount of barking they do at everybody, but to bark only at the bad people and not at the good people is going
to
be hard.
Certain breeds tend
I don't want
to...
one that doesn't shed.
Yeah,
they essentially wanted a stuffed toy dog.
But certain breeds bark more than others. I live with the Doodle, who barks, and the Golden. He doesn't bark. If he barks, I pay attention to him because I know it's worthy. It was a worthwhile bark. And the Doodle barks at just about everything. And when she is just going on, I'll just, you know, call them in. And
the Malamutes rarely bark at anything except when it's food time. And then they don't want to be forgotten, so they start screaming. Once they're fed, then they go back to being quiet. People have come over to the house, like meter readers, read our meters and left and didn't know we had dogs. They never
it's
said
really
a word.
It's really strange pulling up to their house. And this happened to me several years ago. And I was parking, and it was dusky. And out of the – they're fenced, of course, Jim and Robin. But all of a sudden, all these Malamutes were at the fence. No sound at
just
all.
Looking at you.
Just they just – like they emerged from the mist, and they were just standing there. And I thought, yeah, no barking. Mm.
Well, barking, it's arguable, and people have argued, that barking is one of the characteristics that led to the domestication of dogs. That is, they were selected for their barking, to bark at dangers outside the newly formed village life that people were going through at the time. And so we've selected dogs to bark, but the Eskimos... who lived on the ice cap, having a dog that barked wasn't necessarily all that useful. They could see people coming for, you know, 100 miles, and all the people that ever bothered them were their own relatives anyway. So there was really no need to bark. So the dogs that they bred were bred away from barking. Not necessarily bred away, but it just wasn't a characteristic that they saved. And the only time... On the other hand... From time to time, we've had dogs that, Malamutes, that will actually bark, not yowl and scream, but actually bark. And, you know, 1% of them, something like that. But barking is a hard thing to stop.
You have to utilize it to your advantage. You can't physically punish a dog for doing what comes naturally. I mean, now then there's that whole situation and of debarking a dog, which is quite controversial.
Oh, you mean it's like surgically debarking a dog?
Mm-hmm. And you see that in your...
Samoyeds.
Collies, Shelties. You'll see that, you know, often they're debarked because they tend to bark a lot. But I certainly wouldn't be in favor of that approach. Mm-hmm. But... I think you'll find that with people with multiple dogs of that breed perhaps would be predisposed to entertain that idea, but I don't think it's I wouldn't do it.
I guess I find that kind of disturbing, but
it is disturbing.
I don't,
because they still bark.
Yeah, it's easy for me to point the finger at people that debark their dogs, but I live way out in the country far from everybody, and my dogs can scream all they want and there's no neighbors to disturb. If it was life and death for the dog, though, I'm going to put this dog down if they keep barking, then I would say go ahead and debark it. But
they still bark.
They bark, but you can't hear them.
Yeah, it's just like this.
It's like a munch sound. Painting or a monk painting, I would say.
Yeah, that is an unpleasant topic. Let's talk about something else.
Well, I would encourage people who have questions about their own animals.
Let's only talk about pleasant things.
333
daffodils
and unicorns.
From now on, for the last 7 weeks, we're only going to do pleasant things on the show. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Give us a call. Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are here from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. So if you've got some kind of training or behavioral issue and you'd like to have a little advice, you can give us a call.
And by the way, the step one in reducing barking is to praise your dog and give them food. If they're barking as an alarm, they're trying to let you know that there's danger. Mm-hmm. If you go up and yell at them, they don't necessarily understand what you say. They understand the tone of voice, which they confuse with their own. So I'm barking, you're barking, I guess you're hip to the danger, and then you start wailing on the dog, and the dog's going, these humans are just irrational. Have you noticed that, Fred? You know?
Yeah, I see.
Danger is coming, and they hit us. What's our problem?
I never punish for that. I wouldn't. It's just not my nature. I just...
If the dog thinks they're doing something good, you reward them, say, that's good, now let's try to be quiet.
Yeah.
There was a cat walking in the yard next door to me yesterday morning. And Andy was just, and see, well, you know, I get up early and I have neighbors. Then I have to be cognizant of the fact that my neighbors don't get up when I do. Okay? They're still sleeping, and
she's out
there barking.
You can make crank calls to them and get them up.
So I
just, your refrigerator running?
What's the point of if I call her off and yell at her, what's that all about in her mind? So I call them in, and they get their morning treats, and they can go out later. It's just, you know, the punishment just doesn't really
Wolves
work.
Don't bark that much, and one of the reasons is if you're hunting, you don't want to alert the prey that, hey, there's a deer there, and the deer hears the barking and goes, that's a wolf, I think, and they're gone. Yeah. So wolves don't bark. It's something. And, of course, they do bark a little bit, and over time we've selected for that.
Well, if you – well, so one approach to this, if you really wanted to have a dog and you were concerned about barking, you can look for a breed that tends not to be very vocal.
Right.
I guess.
Like Schnauzers bark. And Schnauzers are wonderful little dogs, but I think that's the main complaint from people that own Schnauzers is that they bark, and they do. So you have to just somehow, you know, reap the potential of what their barking means to them. And you know, one thing to do, and we've talked about this before, is when teach your dog to speak. Okay, so then they bark on command, and then what? No speak or something along those lines.
Teaching a dog not to do something is very difficult.
It is.
If not impossible.
So you can encourage them.
So you teach him to do something else that's incompatible with what you don't like. For example, if the dog jumps up, you teach him to sit. And that way when they're sitting, they're not jumping
up. But it's
up.
A greeting behavior.
Mm.
You know,
barking
jumping
is
not – yeah.
Oh, jumping.
But jumping is not – it's how they greet. They, you know, they want to be close to your face. So you can minimize that to a degree by teaching, like, give me a hug. So it's a – It's a request or a command on your part, and then it's fine, and sit. So it just depends on how much time and effort and but anything that's constructive is better than punitive. Mm. We have a caller.
We have a caller. You want to put your headphones on there, Jim? And for other
don't
folks,
don't let him.
But he won't be able to hear without them.
God,
we'll still be able to hear him. Here's a caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi.
I just had a comment to make about what you were saying about not being able to actually teach a dog not to do something. You can just try to train them to have an alternate behavior. And with my two Shih Tzus that I have, you know that with that breed of dog, it's usually typical that they want to eat their own poo.
Okay, what breed is it you have?
Shih Tzus.
Shih Tzus.
Shih Tzus, okay.
And, you know, I've read, and they try to say that a lot of it has to do with them trying to cover the tracks so, you know, prey can't come and get the baby, so you eat the poo in the nesting area back when they were wild. This kind of thing didn't make much sense to me, but what I ended up doing was I gave my dog an alternative in that I would show him the treats, and I would tell him that, you know, if he, when he would go towards his poo, I would tell him, you're going to eat that, you don't get a treat. And they learned that they would actually sit there after they had done their business down the yard, and I'd say, do you want your treat? And they would look at their poo, and then they would look at me, and they actually got to where they decided the treat looks better, and so they'd come running up for the treat. And so they have done this ever since. Is that they're obsessed with going, their brothers, and finding each other's poo. And they will, after they find it in the yard when the other one is gone, they will look at it and they'll smell it and they'll just sit there and then they look at me, and they know that I have the treat. And so they make the decision, I want the treat instead, and they'll leave it alone.
That's remarkable.
Yeah. And you can tell you're a dog person because you can talk about this topic as second nature. And dog people, I find myself in restaurants, you know, in various public places, and we're all talking about the dog eating stuff. And and people are looking, oh,
I know, that's so true.
Look at me, and he's like, and you're going to let that dog lick
me? Yeah. I've mentioned that to my dogs, by the way.
I'm like, yeah, day later on licked my face, but I said, you know, you lay down on the couch where the pillow is, and guess what dog was sitting there, and what was sitting there?
You know, like, which end
you
was
own
it?
A dog, I'm sorry, but your whole house is a dog's rear end to one point or another. And so you just get used to it. That's part of being a dog person.
Well, there's exactly. much truth to what you say, yes.
Yeah, you know, unless you put diapers on them, I mean, every place they sit, that's... You know.
Well, the other thing is that there's a word for a female dog mm-hmm. that dog people use. And I won't yeah. use it on the air because they'll probably shut you down and fine you $1 million.
Right,
but
right.
we're sitting in restaurants and people are, my best of this, my best of uh-huh. You know, and I'm going, it's Sunday morning. People just got out of church. Let's not talk this way.
Yeah. But I just thought this would be interesting to let you know that is something that with breeds mm-hmm. that do have a tendency to eat. If you get them early enough and you know, they'll come up running up the stairs and they did not do their business. And they'll look at me and I say, oh, you didn't do your business? You don't get a treat. They will run back down those stairs and quickly poo and come back up. So they know what I'm saying. And it's like they will sometimes even try to hunch and pretend. But they really didn't need to go. And they're thinking, if I show that I did this, I'll get an extra treat. And I'm like, oh, no. And then they'll run down again and this time really do it.
You must have a great day every day.
Oh, I do. I love my boys. They sleep with us and everything. They're my little boys. So, yeah, it's interesting what you could get a dog to do if you just kind of set your mind to it.
That's true.
All right. Yep. Well, thanks for the story.
That's well, why we're you. In existence.
We're talking this morning about dog behavior with Jim Keel, Carol Lindholm. We'll take any other calls you might have, any other stories you might want to tell after a very short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, the rise of Hitler through the eyes of an American ambassador and his daughter. Eric Larson's book, In the Garden of Beasts, is about William Dodd, who became ambassador to Germany in 1933. His daughter had an affair with the first head of the Gestapo. Larson's book is now out in paperback. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Support for WILL comes from .us, a growing web address for small business, providing a community for small business owners to access website building resources and find domains. On the web at kickstartamerica.us.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are here Monday through Friday, 10 to noon. We have 10 different topics. Let me mention two for Monday. In the first hour, the guest is Bob Switzer. He is professor emeritus of biochemistry at the U of I and has written a memoir about growing up on his family's farm. So it's in part about that. It's a family story, but it's also about how it is that farms like the one where he grew up are really vanishing. A Family Farm, Life on an Illinois Dairy Farm, that's the title of the book. Then in hour number two, we'll be talking with Dame Daphne Sheldrick. She is a Kenyan conservationist. She was born in Kenya, and for many years she worked alongside her husband, who was the founder, warden of the Tsavo National Park. And did a lot of work in working with and protecting animals, elephants in particular. And we'll talk about her experiences. She's written about this in a new memoir, which is titled Love, Life, and Elephants, an African Love Story. And a lot of other things next week as well. You can check the schedule by going to the website, which is will.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter, Will Public Media. In this hour, our guests are Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They're here once a month, always on Friday, first Friday of the month, to talk about dog behavior and dog care. And if you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And for all those people who don't have dogs and thought to themselves, boy, I think I'd really like to have a dog, that last call, just ignore that. Just put that out of your mind, really. It'll be great.
Yeah, no one would ever have kids either if they thought about it too
That's
much.
A lot worse.
Excellent point. And fortunately, I have another caller here we can go to. Let's do that in Champaign. This is line number one. Hello.
Oh, hi there. I have a six-year-old Westie, and he actually is very well-behaved. The only thing, he does this silly thing that when we sit down to dinner, he has a favorite toy, a hedgehog. And when we're sitting down to dinner, he automatically picks it up and starts going by our by us trying to get us to go play with him. And we played with him earlier before we sat down to dinner. So I'm trying to figure out how I can kind of have him not do that or something.
Is it one of those cute little hedgehogs that makes a different noise like a little hedgehog would?
It is a hedgehog. It doesn't make any noise any longer.
Oh. Well.
Why does this bother you?
Yes, that's what I was going to ask.
I think it's, we kind of go around, okay, so you want our attention, and he does pick it up the same time when the phone rings, so I can't figure that one. Now, we didn't raise him, he came from my mother, so we've had him about a year, but it's just always, it's funny, I guess we just.
I think he just derives a sense of contentment. His people are eating, his people are on the phone, and he likes his hedgehog.
When do you feed him?
I usually feed him when I get home in the evening, before we sit down to eat. Mm-hmm.
Well, what you can do is it's fairly easy to train a dog to go, if you get a little area rug, a throw rug, one of those 2.5 by 3 feet rugs, and put it where you would like him to go, and you can train him to on command to go to that spot, and the way you do it is by leading him there and giving him food, maybe even feeding him there.
And his hedgehog.
And along with the hedgehog and everything else he likes, so that when you say rug or whatever you want to say, he runs there and sits there, and then, of course, teach him to stay. Westies are pretty smart. Or you could just train him to stay in a crate, and then he won't bother you. That's the kind of behavior, though, that I don't see that it's really that big a problem.
It is cute, but you're always like, we're always perplexed, like, so why does he do this?
I bet he did it at your mother's.
He probably did, yeah.
Just something. How old is he?
He's 6.
It's probably something he's always done, and she must have found it very endearing as well. And, they can read body language and, if we laugh, they are pleased. So as long as it doesn't have a squeaker in it to bother you, then I just let him enjoy his hedgehog.
And you can try what's not obvious, and that is when he picks up the hedgehog, you can just start praising him and say, oh, what a clever dog you are. And that may be all he's looking for. I don't know. I'd have to see it.
I might try the rug and with the food. And
yeah, the other thing.
Maybe that'll make him kind of settle down.
For people, it's fairly easy to train the dog to do that, but I think it's not my technique. It's on the internet, and several other trainers have pioneered it before I did. But I never pioneered it. But you can also train the dog to run to the rug when people come to the door, and that way they're not jumping on people. So the signal for the dog to run to the door and jump on people is when they hear a knock at the door and hear the door open. All you're doing is transferring the behavior as a result of that cue or that signal. Dog hears a knock at the door, runs to the rug because he knows he's going to get food when he runs there.
That's true. You were talking about barking. Actually, when he was at my mother's, I had a concern when he came to live with us because he barked quite a lot at my mother's. And we had a lab for years, for 13 years. And I had previously owned an Airedale that was barky, and I was just determined I wasn't going to have that with my lab. So I kind of did what the lady previous caller did. I just said, you wanted to bark or something like that? And I go, who has the treat? And he kind of looked like, oh, all right, I won't bark. And so we experienced it where, I had service people come in the house and never knew we had a dog. So I kind of did this with the Westie when he came in the house. I just wasn't going to put up with that. And he is pretty sharp, so he really doesn't bark at the. He rarely barks.
He probably would learn to run for a rug.
He sounds actually
quick.
Quite ideal to me. So.
Oh yeah, actually, he's a very sweet dog. He's very cute and he's very social. So, it's the only things we're just kind of perplexed about.
We had a dog years ago who had his own little stuffed dog, and he had that thing for years. I mean, normally he would take a toy and just tear it apart in about 5 seconds. But we to this day don't know why, he's long passed, but why And we have pictures of him with this thing, and he put it between his legs and just sit there with it. And like you, we had no idea why he was doing it, why he liked it, why he didn't tear it up, but it was just fun to watch him do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. I know he's a sweetie. We really enjoy him. So.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks so
well,
much.
Very good. Thank you. We'll go on here. Another champagne person. This is on our line four. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Yes. Just in reference to that barking, I've got a comment and another question. It's sort of been touched on by this last caller. I've got a Briard. He's about 6 years old. He's gigantic. I guess he was one of the biggest in the litter. And his bark is so loud it shakes the house, you know, shakes the windows kind of thing. Big, deep-chested bark. And I was able to teach him, instead of barking like that, it sort of threats outside, to teach him to growl instead. And mm-hmm. I did it with positive reinforcement. You know, if he growled, I would praise him. And if he barked, I would say, oh, don't be so silly. You know, and just be really sort of cavalier. I'd say, oh, that's just the mailman. Don't be such an idiot. You know, and he would hear my voice that I wasn't concerned. But when I am concerned, I'll go to the window and he'll growl, which is really nice. You know, that way he alerts me without necessarily scaring the neighbors or the mm-hmm. visitors. But my question is that the one thing I have not managed to teach him is good door etiquette. And you were just now mentioning about having a spot that he could run to. I just don't see how that's going to ever work with my dog. He rushes the door, scratches up the floor in such a fury. And, you know, once he sees that I'm calm and I know the person, or even if I don't, that they're not a threat, you know, he'll quit barking. But just the sound of that door sets him off like nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
He's 100% well, perfect dog otherwise.
You start with a target, and it doesn't have to be a rug. It's just nice, you know, a defined space.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a corner, you know, an area, the kitchen could be the kitchen. But you have to be in control. And you start with a dog that's like him, a kind of a large dog. You have a friend knock on the door, and with the lead, you lead him into the kitchen and it's best to give him a lot of food at first, you know, mm-hmm. and something very tasty like liver.
Nobody buys liver.
Nobody buys liver?
No.
Because when you cook it, it smells.
It's gross. It's disgusting. So we should really focus on something that's more readily available.
Birdie
bothered me for years that you always tell people to feed liver.
That's well,
liver
we're
confi- is gross.
We're confirmation people, and we cook liver. We don't care what the house smells like. And,
he probably has a piece of liver in his pocket right now.
When you're, I have dog cookies. They're kind of generic.
Cookies are okay.
But and yes, he does,
but
ladies
I see
and gentlemen.
What you're saying. Make it a good reward.
We call it jackpotting. You know, not just a little treat, but just a lot. But you have to be in control of all the variables. In other words, you don't wait until somebody comes to the door that you don't know and then try to get the dog on lead while they're barking and barking. It's way too late at that
right.
point.
Right.
You know the person's coming, and you can be in touch by telephone or something, and as soon as they knock on the door, you lead them into the kitchen. And you do that several times until the dog and they're on lead, so they can't go to the door, so you don't have that argument. And you do that until the dog is beating you to the kitchen, you know, pulling you in.
I see.
And mm-hmm. then you know you've got something going. Every time you're training a dog, and I don't care if it's to roll over, it's sit, or give a paw, you have to control all the variables. And the most important one is somebody knocking on the door. It can't be random. You have to know exactly when it's coming and so that you can react and train.
Yeah, because he's reacting to the noise at the door. So you
right.
could even have a family member do it.
Sure. And what you're doing is you're using the same cue to elicit a different behavior. And they're both learned behaviors. In other words, doors are not in a dog's universe. They have to be, you know, from a puppy, they grow up and learn what a door is. But it's not, you know, it's not innate like barking. So the signal is the knock, knock, knock. The response is run to the door and bark. Or the signal is knock, 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 run to the kitchen and get food. As I say, it really works. My old secretary, she's not that old, but former secretary, taught her dog to do that within a couple of days. I mean, you know, it's not going to work the first time, but In a couple of days, and the dog was running to the rug, and she said, "Oh, it works." And I go, "Well, of course it works. What do you think I am?"
You can buy, I'm going to give you a tip. It's called Pet Botanics, and it comes in a roll like sausage would. And it's extremely enticing to a dog. You don't have to cook any liver.
It's made of cow's liver.
It comes in different flavors, and you can buy that.
How do you know?
Because I use it all the time.
I mean the flavors.
Oh, well, whatever. It smells good, too, even to people. But you don't have to go out and buy, like, 30 pounds of liver and cook it. And
Right.
I've really touched a nerve with
with the liver.
When I say liver, it's just something that the dog really likes. Yeah. Some dogs don't like liver. Very few, but some dogs.
I don't even buy liver if they like it. It's so gross.
No, I'll definitely have to try that. Yeah, I think it was a manpower issue. I'd been living alone with a dog for such a long time. It was impossible for me to be the one going outside and knocking on the door and then coming back in. So yeah, I failed to mention
a
friend to help. And
at my classes, I always do this. I failed to mention, by the way, when you're giving food, lots of praise. You know, more praise than it deserves. Oh, what a great dog. You ran to the kitchen. Oh, boy. Here's food. Here's a newspaper. Great, great dog. I always assume you're going to do that, but I realize that if I don't say it, you may not think it's part of the exercise, but it is.
Okay. And you try it out, and if you're available and listening to the radio a month from now, call us back and let us know how it worked. Or whether it didn't work.
Sounds good. I'll do that. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We've got at least one more caller here. This is also somebody in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. This is also a barking training exercise, but I was a new owner of a rescue Pomeranian, and he was had bad knees, and I felt sorry for him. So I would give him my milk from my cereal bowl in the morning, and pretty soon he was barking when I hadn't finished, and he wanted the milk. And so I had trained him to bark at me to get the milk.
Mm-hmm. Inadvertently.
Yes. And but it was really easily extinguished, and I don't know if that's because it was a new context that he learned it for, but the little guy hated to be brushed, and later we trained him to like it with treats. But so I just started to brush him when he would bark, and I stopped giving him the food, the milk, and within a day, 2 days, all I had to do was put the brush next to my chair, and he didn't do it, and then it was gone in no time.
So can you brush him now?
He's passed, but yeah, we brushed him.
Oh, sorry.
We got him. My wife actually groomed him. And
So what would you do in the mornings when you just had just a wild eggs, scrambled eggs, and you didn't have any milk?
I always had cereal.
Oh.
But now I'm too old for cereal because I'm lactose intolerant now, so now my dogs don't, there's no danger. But no, he was really smart. I don't know. They are awfully smart, but I think you have to, you know, he had a direct connection between me and that bowl, and then he had a very direct connection between the brush and the barking at the table. And that's the only place I got him to stop barking was at the table.
Well, that was a nice, passive, benevolent way to achieve what you wanted.
Yeah, and it's correction training. And everybody thinks a correction is, you know, popping the dog on the head or kicking him or something. Correction can be as simple as not giving a treat. Okay, that's a correction. The dog expects a cookie, doesn't get it, and will modify his behavior because of that.
Right.
And the other thing is, I mentioned this before, but the theory is on barking, not only do they bark at strangers and what they perceive as danger, but mother wolves can't count. So if they frequently are moving their dens. So it behooves the last puppy to start screaming so that mom won't forget that there's one back there, because when she gets to the new den, she goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's all I had. Okay. And I have a feeling that your little dog was not barking, was saying, don't forget me.
It was impossible.
Don't leave me behind. Well, you know, so she'd bark.
Do you think that the brush sped it up? I thought it did.
Oh, no, I think, yeah. If she didn't like it, it was a very good, I mean, it's not violent. It's not coercive. It's good for her coat.
Yeah.
It's all positive things.
I talked nice while I was doing it.
Oh, sure.
I didn't call him a bad dog or anything.
No. Nope.
Yeah. He was a great dog. But
yeah, she sounds like it.
Five knee operations. But
luxated patellas?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think puppy mill.
Yeah. Yeah. But she did a good thing.
Oh, he was a good dog.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Got a minute or two left. I'm back again thinking about the dog barking when somebody comes to the door and wondering, does the dog think that it's protecting you, or is it that some dogs, at least, they're just really excited about seeing another human, and they just want to go and say, hi, who are you? Let me sniff you.
It's a lot of things. Dogs can't talk. Their barks have various meanings, and if you've been around them long enough, you can kind of figure it out.
Oh, I know the difference between barking at a cat in the yard next door or barking if somebody's coming up the sidewalk. You can tell quality.
We were taking care of somebody's Doberman years ago when they were on vacation, and he was home alone. And we'd come by several times a day and take care of him. When he was barking at us, because we'd come to the door, and he's a guard dog, he wasn't saying, oh, there's someone at the door. He was saying, get out of here. Go away. I will bite you if you come in. Well, of course, he wouldn't, but that's what he was saying and with his bark. So it's not always clear why they're barking, but usually we train the dogs ourselves, just as the gentleman inadvertently trained his dog to bark for milk. We train them because we go to the door and it's Aunt Martha and it's Christmas, you know, and she's got Aunt Martha, and everybody goes, oh. So it's a very exciting thing. Also, dogs, you know, they're not completely wolves, obviously, but wolves do have a tremendous greeting ritual that they go through. Very often the pack will spread out at night to hunt, and then they come back in the morning, and everybody's licking each other. What did you get? I got a rabbit. I got a deer. And they're talking among themselves. It's a greeting. So, and they're barking, and they're so it could be just a greeting behavior. It could be them trying to copy us. It could be a warning to go away. I mean, there are all kinds of things it could be. The cure, though, is always the same.
I'm sitting here feeling like such a failure.
I agree.
Because when I open the door, it takes everything I can to keep them away from, and they're joyful.
Because they love you and you're home.
But they
want
to see who's there.
Well, a lot of times
when people come to the door, they want to know who
they want to know,
I've
had them push the front door open because I never trained any of those alternate behaviors, and Halloween can be just...
Yeah. A friendly dog can be a bigger pain than an unfriendly dog.
Because they want to go out there
those
and
are big dogs
find out,
they want to jump on you and say
and they're friendly anyway, so...
Hey, we got to quit because we're here at the end of the time.
Okay.
Just one more time, we'll mention that there are a lot of things going on, training opportunities, classes you can take with your dogs with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, so you go to their website and see what's going on there, and there will be probably some new classes starting sometime this...
Next month.
Summer? Okay.
Well, yeah, around July 1st.
All right. Jim Keel, Carol Lindholm, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, David.
Support for WILL comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features 10 wines, followed from 7 to 9 p.m. by the smooth jazz guitar music of Lamont Parsons.
And that's it for us on Focus. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine, hosting the show today is Craig Cohen.
Thank you very much, David. And coming up on the Afternoon Magazine, of course, the latest news from NPR, the BBC, and WILL, including a conversation that Sean Powers had with David Morse from the Illinois State Geological Survey about the state of fracking in Illinois. That's coming up. Stay with us. And now let's take a look at what's happening on the commodity markets at this hour. May winter wheat's at 618, down 2¾. July winter wheat at 629¼, down 3¾. May wheat at 608¾, up a half. July wheat at 614½, down 1. May corn's at 672¾, that's up 22. July corn at 624½, another tick, 624 and a half, up 10. May soybeans, 1471 and a half, up 2 3/4. July soybeans at 1475 and a half, up 2. August soybeans, 1454 and a half, up 2 on the day. May soybean meal, 429, that's up 380. July soybeans at soybean meal at 431.10, up 470. May soybean oil, 5320, down 60. July soybean oil, 5370.